Adam Farmer pedals his old Raleigh 3-speed along Route 31, heading from Monument, Massachusetts to Rutterburg, Vermont. The autumn wind slices through his jacket as he pushes forward, determined to reach his father despite battling claustrophobia, agoraphobia, and an intense fear of dogs. In his possession, a carefully wrapped package and his father's worn woolen cap, its familiar scent providing comfort during this solitary 70-mile journey. "I wanted to do this raw, without crutches," he explains, having dumped his medication before leaving. At a weathered Texaco station, an elderly attendant helps with directions but grows distant when Adam mentions his destination. "They listen in on your telephone," the old man cautions in a paranoid whisper, foreshadowing darker revelations to come. As Adam cycles through the New England landscape, time becomes strangely fluid. Morning stretches endlessly, yet entire hours vanish without explanation. The further he pedals, the more his grip on reality loosens. His memories begin to blur, taking on dreamlike qualities. Each mile brings new questions. Why this urgent need to deliver the package? Why now? And why does his supposedly simple mission feel increasingly like a flight from something he can't or won't remember? "Are you really a doctor?" Adam asks during a late-night session with Brint, his supposed therapist. Their exchanges occur in a sterile setting with harsh fluorescent lighting, bare walls, and a metal table. Conversations labeled with codes like tape OZK03 and transcript R109 suggest a governmental investigation rather than therapy. Initially, Brint presents himself as a professional helping Adam recover lost memories. They explore Adam's childhood memories, summer afternoons, his mother's cooking, his father's book-filled study. But the sessions gradually darken, with Brint's questions becoming increasingly pointed about specific dates, names, and what Adam's father might have hidden. The room transforms into a psychological battleground where Adam struggles to reconstruct his fragmented past while Brint guides the conversation, sometimes compassionately, but always purposefully. "I'm merely your guide to the past," Brint claims, though Adam suspects otherwise. Their interactions unfold like a chess match, each carefully weighing their moves while anticipating the other's strategy. Through therapy sessions, a shocking truth emerges. Adam Farmer doesn't exist. The boy's real name is Paul Del Monte, son of Anthony Del Monte, a journalist who exposed government corruption and testified before a Senate committee. After his testimony, assassination attempts forced the family into witness protection. Adam Farmer is nothing. The void yawned ahead of him and behind him, we're told, as this revelation shatters his identity. The discovery begins when Adam finds two different birth certificates in his father's desk drawer, leading him to spy on his parents and overhear his mother's contradictory phone calls. When confronted, Adam's father reveals their entire life and monument is a carefully constructed fiction. Anthony Del Monte became David Farmer. His mother, Louise Nolan Del Monte, became Ellen Farmer. Even their Catholic identity was compromised, though they remained faithful privately. Adam whispers his birth name while looking in the mirror, searching for traces of his Italian heritage. "I wanted to shout it from the rooftops, I am Paul Del Monte." Yet he must maintain the facade, living in constant fear. Mr. Gray, a government agent whose monthly visits remind the family of their captivity, architects their new identity. He embodies the surveillance state, an omnipresent force infiltrating every aspect of their lives. Gray meticulously crafts their cover stories, from educational backgrounds to family histories. He strategically dictates their professions. Adam's father becomes an insurance salesman because it requires minimal documentation and enables quick relocations. Even their religious practices fall under his purview. The family exists within invisible constraints. Vacations where they might encounter old acquaintances are forbidden, and all travel requires advance approval, creating a cage that Adam's mother particularly resents. During Gray's monthly basement meetings, Adam's mother retreats upstairs in silent protest against this imposed authority. After learning the truth, Adam develops his own never-knows hypervigilance. Every stranger becomes a potential threat. Yet paradoxically, this constant fear heightens his appreciation for life's precious moments. Fear had forged love, he realizes, understanding how their shared danger created an unbreakable family bond. Amy Hertz represents Adam's connection to normalcy. Their relationship begins with a collision at the Monument Public Library, where Adam falls for her blue eyes, frankness, and support of his writing ambitions. Their bond grows through shared mischief, especially The Number, a prank where they fill shopping carts at the A&P, then abandon them throughout the store. These moments give Adam rare glimpses of normal adolescence. Amy unknowingly threatens Adam's fabricated identity when she mentions a newspaper editor from Rawlings, Pennsylvania, Adam's claimed hometown, couldn't recall any farmers living there. This forces Adam to lie, creating distance when he most needs connection. During his bicycle journey, Adam repeatedly tries calling Amy from payphones, but always encounters someone insisting no Amy Hertz lives there. Directory assistance confirms no Hertz residence exists in Monument. These failed connections become increasingly disturbing, suggesting either Adam's memory is unreliable or something has erased Amy's existence. As Adam's sessions with Brent progress, disturbing memory gaps emerge. He speaks of a dark cloud bringing terror and frantically demands to know his parents' whereabouts. The narrative builds toward a crucial memory of the family's final journey. After Mr. Gray warns of compromised identities, Adam's parents take what they present as a weekend trip north to the Restawhile Motel in Belton Falls. The next morning, driving toward Bear, Adam's father calmly announces a car following them, Gray's men. What happens next remains the central mystery Adam cannot recall. During his bicycle journey, he finds the Restawhile Motel abandoned. A gas station attendant confirms it's been closed 2 or 3 years at least. This temporal disorientation triggers a breakdown. Adam screams uncontrollably, pushes his bike to the cabin where he once stayed with his parents, and desperately beats on a door before darkness overtakes him. Adam's bicycle journey culminates at a hospital where Dr. DuPont greets him. Inside, Adam faces a shocking revelation. His travels exist only in his mind. The hospital is actually a mental institution where Adam Paul has been confined for years. A clinical report, tape OZK-016, documents failed interrogation attempts on subject A despite medication. The report includes disturbing recommendations, including termination of Adam Paul. The bureaucratic language reveals a horrifying truth. Government agents killed Adam's parents, an event he witnessed but has blocked from memory. Now he's held in a government facility, repeatedly questioned about his father's exposé, trapped in a psychological loop. As medication courses through his veins, Adam sings The Farmer in the Dell until the final verse, The Cheese Stands Alone, while Dr. DuPont calls him Paul. In his drugged state, Adam denies being Paul, concluding, I am the cheese. When everything is stripped away, family, home, even your name, what remains? Adam's fractured world reveals our vulnerability, showing that sometimes the most terrifying truth isn't what lurks in shadows, but when shadows become all we know.